Well, good morning. Man, I'm so glad you're here. You know, this is a very brave and courageous church. Most places don't invite me back two Sundays in a row. I did that once, and a member on the second Sunday morning came up and said, "Oh, you again?" So it's an honor to be here. And we had such a great time last Sunday. So good to reunite with friends that we hadn't seen in a long time, have lunch with some friends as well, and reconnect and see so many that had such an impact on us from 1989 to 1993 when we were members here at Preston Road and beyond. So thank you for letting me come back. Earl, I love your thoughts around the table this morning. I love your ministry as well. You're always welcome at Oklahoma Christian to spread that good news. Okay, so I don't know if you're like me, you might be. I got to confess something. I forget a lot. I will stand up and boldly walk into another room and wonder, okay, why did I come into this room? Christmas a couple years ago, I bought the perfect gift for my wife, Darla. It came in the mail. I was able to get it out of the mail before she saw it. I put it in that special place where I knew that she would never find it, but I would be able to come back across it and give it to her on that special Christmas celebration. And a couple weeks before Christmas, I realized I had no idea where I put that gift. But I remembered what I got, so I ordered the exact same thing. It came back in the mail. I got it from the mailbox before Darla got out there. I wrapped it again, and I took it right back to where I knew she would never find it. And lo and behold, there was the other gift I bought for her a month or so before. I tend to forget. Sometimes I learn something, and then I forget it, and then I relearn it. Now, actually, that's a blessing for me pretty often. I love being in the class with Dr. Turner this morning. He talked about some things, frankly, that I had forgotten about, some great connections, important points that really makes the Bible come alive when you think about real people writing real stories about real people. So last November, I'm reading the Sunday newspaper, and there is a special article on something that happened back in 1995. Now, many of you all will remember this, but there's many that won't remember this. You're too young, frankly. But in 1995, a terrible terrorist event occurred in Oklahoma City. The federal building, the Murrah building, was blown up. 168 lives were lost. It was terrible. This article talked about a first responder that came in from out of state, and there were many that did to provide aid and care and comfort during the days and weeks following that bombing. The story talked about this first responder meeting a man and realizing this was the governor of the state of Oklahoma, then Governor Frank Keating. And the first responder pulled his wallet out and he took a dollar bill out and he said to the governor, "This is my Oklahoma dollar." And the governor said, What do you mean this is your Oklahoma dollar? And the first responder said, "I came to Oklahoma with this dollar, and I have not been able to spend it since I've been here. You all have taken care of me in every way. You've paid for my food, for my lodging, for my water, for my transportation. This is my Oklahoma dollar." Now, on the Oklahoma Christian campus, we have, really, it's my favorite part of the campus. You see, in 1995, in April, when that bomb went off at the federal building, there was an American elm tree that was there at ground zero. All the leaves were blown off. Most of the branches were broken off. The tree caught on fire. And then within weeks, that tree came back to life. It began to leaf again. It's a beautiful tree there at the National Memorial. Pieces of that tree have been taken and planted in a number of places across the state of Oklahoma. That is our survivor tree. On my campus, right between the cafeteria, the student center, and our library, it's called the Maybe Learning Center. Yeah, that's a donor, okay? It was a donor that... It's actually right around the corner from the Payne Athletic Center on campus. In the freshman guys' dorm, it's Fails Hall, okay? It is not a prophecy. Those are donor names, and we want to honor our donors. But that tree, that piece of that survivor tree is planted on our campus between the library and the student center, and it's just beautiful. But there's more to that story. You see, 6.5 years later, after the Murrah bombing, 9/11 occurred. Well, because Oklahomans had been connected with terrorism and they knew about the disaster and the kind of aid and care people would need, there were Okies that immediately went to Manhattan after 9/11, and they developed a lot of relationships. In fact, the relationships were so tight that every April there are New Yorkers that come back to Oklahoma to be with their friends to commemorate the anniversary of the Murrah bombing, and every September the Okies go back to New York with their friends and they commemorate 9/11. Well, one of the fellas who came from New York is named Ron Vega. Ron is actually the architect, the designer of the World Trade Center Memorial there in Manhattan. Well, what most people don't know is that 2 weeks after 9/11, as they're excavating the rubble of the Twin Towers, they find a surviving tree. It's a calera pear tree. They took that tree and they nursed it back to health. They took 10 cuttings from it, identical pieces of that tree, and they have grown those. 9 of those 10 are planted there at the World Trade Center site. The 10th one was placed in a minivan by Ron Vega that he drove with his wife Judy cradling that small tree, and they drove it from New York City to Oklahoma Christian's campus, and it's planted right next to the Oklahoma survivor tree. I love that spot. Now, the article went on to explain something else to me that I had forgotten. You see, the executive director of the memorial in Oklahoma City, Carrie Watkins, she talked about what this idea of the Oklahoma standard was. She says it is to serve people, to honor people, and to be kind to people. And when I read that, I realized that this standard, this is our standard. This is the Christian standard. Matthew chapter 20, a really interesting story. You see, James and John apparently had a mom that really looked out for them. And this mom gathered them together, and she went in and talked to Jesus and said, "Jesus, I want you to promise that my sons will be on your right and your left when the time comes." And that made the other apostles really upset that this group was vying for position and power. And in verse 28, Jesus talked about service. He said, the Son of Man did not come to earth to be served, but to serve. It's a part of our standard. And then Paul writes in Romans chapter 12, when he's talking about things that we ought to do, he says, honor others above yourself. And then in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24, he talks about kindness. He says, be kind to everyone. So this idea of service and honor and kindness. I want to tell you 3 Bible stories. You know one of them really well. One you know about. The third, if you're like me, you might not really remember it too much. And I'm not sure why I don't remember it, because you'll understand that it's a story that maybe some preteen young men would really enjoy. And then there's a story that you know really, really well. And then I want to finish with one other story. So, Acts chapter 9. When we think about the apostle who traveled a lot, we think about Paul. But the reality is, Peter did some of that also. And in Acts chapter 9, Peter is going to visit some of the Christians in other places. And he ends up in a place called Lydda. But while he is there, a nearby town of Joppa has a believer in Jesus, a disciple, a follower, and she is great. Man, she serves others. She does things for the poor. Her name is Tabitha. It's translated as Dorcas. It means gazelle. And, you know, that's probably a very fitting name, because she was quick. She was quick to serve the poor. Well, Tabitha gets sick, and Tabitha passes away. And the other disciples there in Joppa are so upset. They learn, though, that Peter is nearby in Lydda, and they send two men to Peter to say, "Come quick." And Peter did. He comes to Joppa. They take him into the upper room where Tabitha's body has been washed, and she is laying in state in the second floor of this building. Peter steps in there, and there are widows all around, and they are crying, and they are showing Peter what Tabitha has done for them. "Look at these robes and these clothes that she has made for us." After a few minutes, Peter dismisses everybody from the room, and he gets on his knees, and he prays, and he says to Tabitha, "Tabitha, get up." Tabitha opens her eyes, she sees Peter, she sits up, Peter helps her up, and then he calls everybody back into the room. When we serve, and when we honor, and when we are kind, we do things that the world doesn't expect from people. Likewise, the way that Tabitha served the people and the poor of Joppa, and the way Peter came in and served her, had a great impact on that community, because it says that throughout Joppa, people heard about what happened and they turned to believe in Jesus. So when we serve people, the world takes notice and people come to Christ. That's service. Now, what about honor? Man, here's the story. As a young man, I just didn't really remember. So, 1 Samuel, the end of chapter 23, you know the great rivalry between King Saul and David. King Saul loves him sometimes because David does great things, but other times he fears him and tries to kill him. He throws spears at him. He does almost everything he can sometimes to get rid of David. At the end of chapter 23 in 1 Samuel, it says that Saul and his men have David and his men cornered. I mean, it is almost over right here. But then the Philistines invade the country, and Saul is told, "You've got to fulfill your duties as king and defend your country." And so Saul with his men leave. They drive out the Philistines. Now it's 1 Samuel chapter 24. Word comes back to Saul that David is in the desert of En-Gedi. So Saul says, "This is my chance." He gathers 3,000 great soldiers with him, and they go to the desert of En-Gedi. They arrive, and they are there at the crags of the wild goats. They're going past a sheep pen. And that's when the story for a young boy kind of gets more interesting. You see, all of a sudden, King Saul needs a little bit of privacy. Nature is calling, and King Saul needs to be by himself. He goes into a cave, leaves all of his 3,000 soldiers out, and he is in the cave, and at the back of the cave is David and his men. And David's men say, "This is exactly what God promised you. God promised that your enemies would be delivered into your hands. David, here is your chance." David sneaks up. In fact, I think the message says, like a cat, David sneaks up to Saul. He has him in his grasp. He cuts a corner off of his robe, and he becomes conscience-stricken. He feels guilty. He sneaks back to his men. They can't believe that David has not taken Saul out right then. And David tells his men, "Stand down. This is the appointed of God. This is the anointed of God. This is the leader that God has chosen. We're not going to harm him." The men can't believe it. Saul finishes his business, goes out of the cave, and begins walking down the road. And David comes out and yells after him. And David actually bows down. And King Saul says, "Is that you, my son, David?" And David says, "I had you in here." But vengeance might not be God's. It is not mine. I don't know what people are telling you, but I am not out to get you, King. I could have gotten you. And he holds up a piece of the robe. And immediately, Saul changes his tune. This man who is chasing David to kill him realizes that, David, you are a better man than I am. King Saul says, Who in their right mind would have their enemy within their grasp and then let them go? King Saul says, David, I know that someday you're going to be the king of this nation. Please promise me that you won't do away with my family. And King Saul takes his men and stops chasing David. See, when we provide honor to people, even people who are antagonists of ours, the world doesn't expect that, and people turn to peace. Now, I'll admit to you that this peace was temporary. Saul didn't give up the chase, but two chapters later, something similar happens. David has the opportunity to kill Saul again, and he chooses not to do it, and again, the antagonist turns toward peace. So the world doesn't expect us to serve, and when we do, the world takes notice and turns to Jesus. Antagonists don't expect us to honor them and treat them well, but when we do, they turn to peace. And here's the third story. Man, you know this one well. I love this story. John chapter 2. Jesus gets an invitation to go to a party. It's a wedding party. I don't know if it's a shower. That might have happened earlier. And maybe the guys were there. I'm not sure. But I hope you have a good time. So in John chapter 2, there is this wedding that's going on in Cana. Now, this is a kind of a special time in the history of the Jewish people. It's a special time also with regard to creating families. It's a special time about weddings and wedding feasts. You see, these go on for several days, and it is a great time had by all. And if you, as the host, run out of food or drink or something else, it's not just a mistake, and it's not just embarrassing. It is shameful. Now, Jesus has been invited to this wedding. Jesus' mom is at this wedding, and Jesus' disciples are at this wedding. First of all, I love the fact that Jesus was there because he was invited. This couple, these families, wanted Jesus at their wedding party. Well, you know the story. Things are going well, and then they run out of wine. And Mary calls Jesus over. And Jesus' mom says to him, they're out of wine. Do you remember Jesus' response? He says, Mother, it's not yet my time. He understands that Mary is not saying, hey, could you get in the car and run down to the grocery store and bring back some more stuff? It's not that at all. That's not how the first century world operated. This was a serious deal, and it took something special to deal with this. Jesus says, Mother, you know it's not yet my time. And the mother of Jesus does what any great, responsible mother does with her son. She ignores that statement and says to the servants, whatever he says, do it. And we get the impression that she then leaves. And there are six stone pots that are there. And these big jars, they have 20 to 30 gallons capacity. And they're actually the jars that are used for ceremonial washing. It is water that's in these jars. And Jesus says, fill those jars up. Then he tells the servant, take a drink of this to the master of the wedding banquet. And that happens. And the master of the wedding banquet brings over the bridegroom and says, I can't believe this. This is unlike anything that happens at these parties. You see, at all other weddings, people provide the best, highest quality wine at the beginning when people can actually notice it and they're just beginning to enjoy it. And he says, but you have saved the very best for the end. The world doesn't expect us to serve others. The world doesn't expect us to honor those who dislike us. The world doesn't expect us to be kind in every situation. But when we're invited to show up, and we do show up, and we make a difference like Jesus did, the world takes notice. In this particular case, you know who believed even more because of what Jesus did at the wedding? It wasn't the masses, because this was done pretty quietly. But it says that the disciples put their faith in Jesus when they saw what had occurred. The world has certain standards. They are not our standards. We surprise the world when we serve and when we honor and when we are kind. So, in 1921, Catherine Laws was told, and by the way, this is a story. I love this story. This comes out of one of Max Licato's books. 1921, Catherine Laws and her family are moving about 30 miles outside of New York City. Now, it's a pretty special move because Catherine's husband, Louis, has just been appointed the warden at Sing Sing Prison. Sing Sing is full of murderers and kidnappers. I mean, the worst of the worst. These are men that society has put away essentially for years and years, and in many cases for life. And Catherine is told before she makes the move, whatever you do, Catherine, don't go to the prison, and certainly don't take your three young daughters with you to the prison. Catherine is reported to have said, you know, my husband and I are coming to take care of these men, and these men will take care of us. They hadn't been there very long when the first basketball game was scheduled to be played in Sing Sing Prison. And Catherine took her three daughters, and they went into the prison, and they sat in the stands with the inmates and watched the game. Catherine later learned that there was an inmate who was blind. So Catherine went back, and she taught this man Braille so he could read. She then learned that there were a couple of inmates that could not hear, and they spoke by sign language. And so what did Catherine do? She learned sign language so she could communicate with these two. You see, Catherine loved these men, and these men loved her back in return. The world didn't expect that, and these men didn't expect that. But when we serve, and when we honor, and when we are kind, when we love, the world takes notice. And proof of that was 16 years after Catherine and Louis and the three girls had moved to take this job. You see, in 1937, one morning, Louis Laws did not show up at work. And very quickly, the rumor and then the fact went out that there had been a terrible car accident. And Catherine Laws had been killed in a car accident. Her body was actually placed in the home. They lived 3/4 of a mile from the prison, and it was there for family visitation and on display. The next morning, the acting prison warden was making his rounds, and when he got around to the front of the prison, he was amazed because every single inmate was standing at the gate. They were standing facing in the direction of the Law's home. Every single inmate was silent. Many were crying. They all had looks of sadness and melancholy and dejection on their face. He realized that all of the inmates wanted to pay their respects to Catherine, and so they did it the only way they could, and that was to gather at the front gate and face their home. The acting prison warden made a pretty remarkable decision, spur of the moment. He addressed the men and he said, I understand. I'm going to open the gate and you can go and pay your respects. But I want every one of you to come back. Without guards, without anyone following them or supervising them, The prisoners of Sing Sing Prison left the prison, and they walked to the law's home, and they paid their respects to the family of the woman they loved. And that night, they were all back in prison. Brothers and sisters, when we serve others, when we honor others, when we are kind to others, when we love others, the world takes notice, and we can change the world. Please stand while we gather to sing.